he, that is Jesus, said to the disciples, there was a rich man who had a manager. And charges were brought to him that this man was wasting his possessions. And he called him and said to him, what is this that I hear about you? Turn in the account of your management, for you can no longer be manager. And the manager said to himself, what shall I do since my master is taking the management away from me? I am not strong enough to dig, and I am ashamed to beg. I've decided what to do so that when I am removed from management, people may receive me into their houses. So summoning his master's debtors one by one, he said to the first, how much do you owe my master? He said, 100 measures of oil. He said to him, take your bill, sit down quickly, write 50. Then he said to another, and how much do you owe? And he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said to him, take your bill and write 80. And the master commended the dishonest manager for his shrewdness. The sons of the world are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than the sons of light. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous wealth, so that when it fails, they may receive you into eternal dwellings. One who is faithful in very little is also faithful in much, and one who is dishonest in very little is also dishonest in much. If then you have not been faithful in the unrighteous wealth, who will entrust to you the true riches? And if you've not been faithful in that which is another's, who will give you that which is your own? No servant can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. This is the word of the Lord. I really love this parable, which is why I'm preaching it again 5 years later. And it kind of occurred to me, I mean, it's odd to preach something twice and probably more odd to preach it three times. So this is it. This is the shot. I like this parable because it is widely held as the most difficult parable to understand of Jesus. And I think that's a fair assessment. And the reason that I think it's difficult is because the lead character is such a scoundrel. Okay, that, you know, let me just sum it up for you a second. You know, the manager goes out, he wastes his rich man's possessions, he gets fired, then he goes out and works this dishonest scheme in order to save his own hide, and then coup d'etat here, he's commended by Jesus for it. What, huh? Doesn't make any sense. Wait, I mean, is what we're talking about, is the point of this that Jesus is commending dishonesty? Is that what we're supposed to be thinking of this? Of course not, right? But what's really amazing about this parable is I think it just sort of messes with our religious paradigms. Because here is a skunk, a scoundrel, a thieving, conniving, dishonest, inherently bad person, and he's the hero of one of Jesus's parables. How could it be? Let me tell you why. This parable is not about honest or dishonest. It's not about good or bad, and we'll talk about that. This parable is first and foremost about shrewdness. See, that's what Jesus commends, right? Isn't that what verse is it? Verse 9 in there, he commends the man for his shrewdness. And sometimes we think of shrewdness as a negative thing. We think of it as sort of a stealing of sorts. That, you know, it's kind of like we got the rich investment banker and he buys this company and he shrewdly flips it and sells it to China and all the jobs go off and all the regular people don't have anything. We say, yeah, it was shrewd, but we kind of think it was borderline ethical. See, in this culture, shrewdness isn't negative. It's actually a positive. It's more thought of as wisdom. It's about prudence. It's about assessing a situation correctly. And that is what Jesus is commending. We're going to find out what that is. But more than that, and this is where I think the church has misread this parable over the years. I think this parable is about the nature and the character of grace. And we got to find that out. So let's turn and look at this for a second. So here's the setup. You've already heard it. There's a rich man and there's a manager. Now the rich man has all these, presumably it's probably land, and he has sharecroppers on the land, and he's so wealthy that he has a business, a company. He has somebody who manages the assets and the debts for him. And it says that it was told the rich man somehow that the manager was wasting his possessions. And so he brings the man in. Let me say this. Okay. The rich man, by the way, is God. The manager is us. That's a really fun one, by the way, that the manager is us. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that. And the idea is that the man comes in and the rich man fires him for being wasting his possessions. And the idea of wasting the possessions has two meanings. First and foremost, I think there's the spiritual side of this is that he's been a bad steward of what God has given him, of what the rich man has given him. But the second idea is a little bit deeper. I think the wasting of possessions symbolizes sin. The wasting of possessions symbolizes our sin. And the reason I think that is because the firing of the manager symbolizes God's judgment. Okay, so the manager gets brought in and the rich man fires him. And then in a sense, there's going to be this consequence. Remember, the manager says what the consequence is. He says, you know, now that I've been fired, everyone's going to know I'm a liar. And so what's going to happen to me? I can't dig ditches and I can't beg for a living. You know what that is? I can't dig ditches and I can't beg for a living. That's hell. That's the literal symbol of hell in this story. And so what we're looking at the very beginning is judgment and then ultimate punishment. So that the rich man fires him and that there is this punishment, which is he's not going to be able to get himself out of. He's going to be homeless. He's going to be destitute. He's going to have to beg. This is hell. But there's a catch in it. The catch is that there's a delay in the consequence. There's this period of time in between when the manager is fired and when he's going to have to experience the ditch digging. How do you know this? Well, a couple things. First of all, it says that the manager went out and summoned the master's debtors. Now, to summon them, he would have sent out the servants of the master, you know, guys who were underlings, which means the servants didn't know yet that the manager had been fired, right? There's this some delay in the sense of the knowledge of the manager being fired. You understand this if you work in a business, right? Like in today's corporate world, if they fire you, what do? They take a security guard and they walk you out and they don't let you take your files or your computer. That's not happening here. For some reason, this man still has possessions of his accounting books and his computer and his file, and word hasn't gotten out yet that he's been. Second reason is these people come to him, the debtors, and they cut contracts with him. And they cut contracts with the manager under the understanding that he's still authorized to do so by the rich man. Third piece of evidence that there's this delayed consequence is that the manager says to the debtors, sign the contracts quickly. Why does he tell them to sign the contracts quickly? Because he knows word's going to get out soon. He understands that something is happening, that he's got this finite amount of time by which he has to accomplish this task. And so he's got this period of time in between judgment and in between his condemnation. And Jesus is saying, this is you. This is right now. You are in a period of time in between judgment and consequence. And I think this is lost on us sometimes. I think, you know, the stories, the kind of pop bad theology is. We're going to go to the throne of heaven, and that there it's going to be decided whether we're guilty and sinners or not. No. Hold on. That's already been decided. Judgment has already been rendered. It's already been told to us that we are sinners. And therefore, the only thing going on here is a delayed consequence. It's that hell is not immediately applied, but we're in this in-between time, in between judgment and consequence. And the parable is about what you should do in the in-between time. This parable is therefore about being shrewd in the time between the judgment of God on your sin and the ultimate consequence. See, what this parable is not about is whether you're good or bad, whether you're honest or dishonest. And that's why Jesus is messing with us with the care. That's why this rich man is the perfect, the manager is the perfect character of us. Because he's a lying, thieving, conniving person. And that's not even up for debate. No, he's not even debating it. He's not even trying to make the case that he wasn't guilty. And that actually is the beginning of the shrewdness of the manager. He understands who he is. He's not lying to himself. He's not saying I'm a better person than I actually am. And this parable, therefore, it's not about good or bad or not. That's been decided. If you're shrewd, you'll take that for granted and have a true self-awareness of who you are. I'm a sinner fallen short of the glory of God. I've been condemned. Hell is looming. What do I do? You've got to be shrewd. And that's what the man does. The man isn't deluded about himself. And so he has a brilliant idea. He says to himself, okay, I got to do something because everybody in the village is going to know I'm a liar and I'm a cheater and they're not going to want to hire me anymore. I can't get another job after this. What do? I need to do something to be welcomed into their houses. Okay, that phrase welcomed into their houses, that is the symbol of heaven and salvation. He says, well, I need to be welcomed into houses. I need to do something to save myself from being homeless. And so the man devises a plan and he calls in all the master's debtors and he says to them, look, how much do you owe? 100 measures of oil? Tell you what, make it 50. And he cuts the debt in half. Now, just for a little background on this. This is not like jars of canola oil for $3.50 at the grocery store. These are very expensive commodities in this culture. And so 50 measures of oil, they think's like 500 denarii, which is equivalent to 500 days' wages, which is equivalent to a year and a half of salary. So let's just say, for the sake of argument, 50 measures of oil is worth $50,000, probably worth more than that. When he cuts it from 100 measures of oil to 50 measures of oil, what the manager is doing is, in a sense, he is cutting the debt of the debtors from $100,000 to $50,000. Just think of what a big sum that really was. Imagine, you know, your banker, Bubba, comes to you and he says, hey, you got a mortgage. You owe a couple hundred thousand. You know what? Cut it in half. Just cut it in half. What are you going to say in response? You're smart, Philip. I bet you're not going to say that. You will in a minute. But your first question is going to be, come on now, what's the catch? Is it like a triple interest rate on the other half of this? Or like, what kind of fee do I have to put? And in a sense, you know, we have to read this in, but in a sense, what the man is saying is, it's just because of the generosity of the master. He's just having a good day. He wants to cut you a good deal. There's no other reason for it. Now think about this. What's your reaction at that point? Hallelujah, right? Now imagine 75% of this room has debts to the rich man. Only one person said hallelujah. Y'all people need to learn to say hallelujah, okay? Imagine everybody in you're in a small town, and everybody all at once gets their debts cut in half. I mean, we think, you know, Trump's got this tax cut coming. We're all excited about it. What's the idea? Put a couple $100 in the pocket of the average guy. What's he going to do? He's going to go buy cars and fix his house up. You know, he's going to fuel the American economy. And we're all pretty excited about it. Imagine you come into $50,000 and you virtually have no assets. You think you're going to be excited about that? I mean, you think on the way home, you're not going to buy your wife a dress and get a new mule? And then what are you going to do that night? What are you and everybody in the village going to, y'all going to sit around like a bunch of boring people and be like, oh, gee, golly, that was great. No, come on. We're Mobilians. We're throwing a party, right? We're probably having a parade. Closing down the streets, celebrating. And what are we saying? Up in joy. I mean, the town is on fire with joy. Everybody's excited, celebrating. You know, and they're excited because, look, we've got all this money. Isn't this great? No, their joy is going to be out of the money, but it's going to be directed at something else. Oh, yeah, it's the manager. What a great guy. He understands our situation. He was our advocate. No, 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 no. The joy is going to be pointed at more than that. They're going to look at the wealthy man and they're going to say, that guy did us right. And he's going to become the object of their affections. Put a pin in this for a second. Because what I think is happening in the midst of celebration, you got to understand, rich people at this time are different than rich people in our time. You know, most people who gain wealth in our day and age, we pile it all up and we put it in a bank. And then what do? We buy houses and take trips, anything we can do to be by ourselves with all of our beloved money, right? We isolate ourselves. We're individuals, not in this culture. What a wealthy person does in this culture, they are as much a part of the community as anybody else is. They're embedded in it. They don't buy companies and ship jobs to China. That would ruin their reputation in the midst of the community. And what the wealthy people at this time, and you could still see this if you went to the Middle East now, the wealthy people of this time, what they valued more than having money was to be viewed as generous. I know this is strange. But this is the way it was culturally. They would rather be known as generous than to be rich. This is an important idea. Because what's going to happen is everybody's going to start celebrating. They're going to be in the streets. They're going to be partying. And what are they going to be saying about the rich man? What a guy. I mean, I know there's these other villages around, but nobody has a wealthy benefactor like we do. Nobody has a town like ours. This guy is generous and he's good and he's given us all of this money. There is none like me. They would have celebrated and they would have renowned the name of the rich man wherever they would because he cut their debt. And no one knew the real story. No one knows that all the contracts are cut illegally by the manager. No one knew that it was designed to win the favor of the people for the manager and ultimately really for the rich man. All the people knew was, I just got 50,000 bucks. And I got it because of the generosity of that wealthy man. Okay. The scheme's not done yet. The manager's gotten favor from everybody, but now he has to go back to the master and turn in his accounting books. So he goes to the master, and the master has obviously figured out what has gone on. And the master knows that all of the debts have been halfway forgiven illegally in a thieving sort of way. And I'm sure that master knew immediately, this guy just cost me half of my wealth. What would you do if you were the master? You know what you do. You go around in the town and you tell everybody, sorry, contract was null and void. It was signed by an unauthorized agent whom I had previously fired. You think your debt's 50? No, actually, it's 100 now. Back to 100. What's the effect of that? The effect is, everybody says, this rich guy is a greedy, no good, you know what. He's evil and he's wicked. And even though it's fair, no. When everybody's celebrating and excited, and then you come back and you take it back from them, of course, you're just going to be regarded as the wicked rich guy. And see, this is why the plan is so masterful. See, in between verse 7 and verse 8, if you still have your Bible open, I know this is a lot to fill in, but you got to understand. He goes out and cuts the debt in verse 7. Then all of a sudden in verse 8, the master says, commends the man for his shrewdness. What happens in between verse 7 and verse 8? Something happens. Something shrewd happens. And you know what it is? It's that the manager has traded on the gracious character of the rich man for his salvation. See, the shrewdness of the plan was that he knew the master was generous and good and would want to be known as generous and good. And so what he did was leverage that stuff in order to make the master look great. And he knew the master wouldn't come back and redo those contracts because he knew that the rich man would rather sacrifice to be known as good than it would be to not sacrifice and keep evil. Who is this? This is our God. This is the gospel. God gives up the riches of heaven. He sacrifices those things. He hands them over in order that he would be known as good, in order that he would be glorified. You know, the agenda of God is that he would be glorified. That seems strange to us, but God's agenda is that his character and his nature would be known for what it actually is, which is beautiful and good and generous and grace-filled. And here's what's crazy about this. The manager knew that and traded upon it. He leveraged it. And you don't like those words about religion, do you? That sounds conniving. It sounds negative. It's shrewd. See, what he was smart enough to realize was, I can dig ditches all day long and I'm never getting out of this thing. The delusion that most of us are under is, hey, I'll get out of hell. It'll be okay. No. He might be bad, but he's not dumb. And Jesus is saying, maybe you ought to follow that and do like he's doing. You're bad, just don't be dumb about it. You never heard that out of a preacher's mouth before, have you? I don't know if I've ever said that. Don't be dumb. That's the sense of shrewdness, though. I mean, the idea of shrewdness would be, here it is, the gospel before you. And the gospel isn't for the weak. The gospel is for the smart. The gospel is for the shrewd. The gospel is for the people who realize, you know what? I'm going to be stuck digging ditches, homeless, begging for a living, unless the only asset I got, the only thing in the game that's going to get me out of this is the good character of the master. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to take that good character and I'm going to leverage it for my salvation. And that sounds terrible, doesn't it? It should. That's why it's called the scandal of grace. That's why grace is scandalous. That's why the world doesn't understand it. That's why he's telling this parable. Because Jesus' listeners, like us, live in a world where if you do bad, you get bad. If you do good, you get good. Jesus is saying, nah, I'm sorry, that's not the paradigm. Actually, the paradigm is, bad is already all, good is off the table. You're already bad. The question is whether you're smart or whether you're dumb. And it's an appeal to justice. And wait a second. We're leveraging the Father for, yeah, that's what grace is. It's strange. It's scandalous. It's in fact somewhat unfair. I mean, think about it. Justice demands that when there is a wrong, there must be a right to make up for it. That if there is a debt, that the debt must be paid. And the scandal of grace is that God pays the debt for you. The scandal of grace is the wrong man goes to jail, and the one who is perfect goes to jail, and the ones who are guilty get out free. You ever seen that documentary on Netflix, The Making of a Murderer? Seen that one? No? Stephen Avery? You gotta go home and watch it. It's really good. Here's the story. Stephen Avery's put into jail for 18 years. He's in jail for murder, and then he's exonerated. On DNA evidence, you're like, yes, this is a great documentary, true story. Guy gets away free. He's out for some short period of time. And you know what? He gets charged with murder again. And the documentary suggests unfairly. And he goes back to prison. And he's sitting in prison even today. And you're sitting there, you're just gripped by the whole thing. You're like, I cannot even believe this goes on in the United States of America. I mean, this is the whole documentary is so riveting because you're like, this is the most unfair, unjust thing that a guy would be wrongly charged not once, but twice. And that both of the murderers are walking free and he's in jail. The gospel makes the Stephen Avery case look plausible and gentle. So what God's saying is, I'm gonna go to jail. No, I'm gonna take the death penalty that you deserve. And we're gonna trade, and you're gonna walk free, so that the guilty are free and the innocent are locked up. And that's the scandal of grace. And I think what Jesus is saying is, it's not about being religious or not religious. It's not about whether you're good or you're bad, or you should try harder, or you should do better, and none of that. Guess what? All that's out the window. Doesn't matter anymore. The question is whether you're dumb or you're smart. The question is whether you're shrewd enough to understand the character of God the Father and to leverage the grace of God to buy your salvation. That's the beginning of the parable. Now there's a second part. And the second part of the meaning, I think, and you see this in the parable, is that the effect is not simply that the manager is saved. The effect of this is that the whole village is praising and enjoying the name of the rich man. And so what we see in this is that the manager leverages the master stuff to create a renown for the master. Here's the spiritual concept here is leverage the place that you are in order to create glory for the Father. It's a stewardship. It's a second idea of stewardship. And that's certainly, look, money's a great one to start with. Money's an easy tool that you can tangibly use to leverage for the glory of God. The second one, who you are, your talents, your gifts, the way that you're uniquely made. These things, you're not made who you are simply for your own prosperity or your own enjoyment. That the quirks, the talents, the good, the bad, all those things that are you, created by God in order to be leveraged for his glory in the world. Your place in life. You know, I love that about this church. One of the things I love about you is I think people in this church are well positioned in this city. I don't want to get in the way with that, with what we're doing here. Like, the goal here is not to create 39 church programs so that all you ever know is the inside of this building and no one knows who you are on the outside of the building. That's a vision of church that people are doing. Here's the idea. Let's equip you. Let's drink deeply of the scriptures, and then let's disperse to the places that God has put us. And let's leverage those places for his glory so that, you know, It's like, go get on some boards in the city and get involved with your neighborhood. You know, be on the PTA. My dad was in banking for a number of years. And at one point, I think my dad was a member of three different country clubs. And I was like, Dad, are we rich? We have three different country clubs. What's going on? He's like, son, you know, the Bill Cosby line, you ain't rich, I'm rich. But I mean, the idea was, no, he's like, no, the bank pays for all those things. I'm like, why does the bank want you to be a member of three country clubs? He's like, because they want me out there. They want me involved on every board. They want me in the clubs. They want me at the schools. They want me, you know, out there meeting and knowing all sorts of people. Why? Just to be friendly? Sell loans, right? Yes, you know this. You've heard of these concepts before. This is why Jesus says, the people, what's the word? What's the phrase? The men, the sons of the world, the sons of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own than are the sons of light. You know, they're saying, like, you realize that people that work for money are smarter about leveraging their assets than are you, us, O people of God, and leveraging the glory of God for the fruition and the flourishing of the world. I used to think this is, golf was my hobby. And I used to think it was for my pleasure and my enjoyment. And one day it occurred to me, I was sitting in the golf cart, and I'm like, you know what? I've never experienced another place in life where you sit next to a man that you hardly know for 4 hours and you talk about everything. And I'm like, maybe I should leverage that. Maybe there's an opportunity to do something for God's glory in that time. You know, I think, Chris, you were telling me, Chris was telling me at lunch the other day, they picked a specific baseball league and they joined that baseball league. And it maybe wasn't the baseball league they were choosing to join, but you know why they did it? Because it was the one in their community. And they were like, you know, we want to know the people in our community, and you don't know what God can do with that, so that I have the relationships and the places that God could leverage those things for his glory. And I don't have a formula for what that is. This is the glory of walking with Jesus. This is why you need to be in a small group, and you need to be in pastoral relationships, that you work through those things and you begin to shrewdly think about, how do I leverage the place that I am for the glory of God? I was telling one of our members who was the president of the decals, I was suggesting to him a couple of years, maybe you ought to think about how to use your presidential status at the decals for God's glory. And I was like, I don't know how that would ever happen there. It can, right? I mean, the sense of this parable is, God's saying, leverage my stuff for my glory in the world. And actually, leverage it, you skunk, scoundrel, thieving, conniving Christian, for your salvation. Let's pray.